Go ahead.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you. Good morning, everybody. We are here for a special meeting of the Annuity and Pension Board Employees Retirement System of the City of Milwaukee. Today is Thursday, June 6th, 2024. It was scheduled for 11:30 a.m. Right now it is 11:32 a.m. Jan, can I have a roll call, please?
Yes, Mr. Christensen?
Here.
Ms. Ford?
Here.
Mr. Helling?
Here.
Ms. King is excused. Mr. Klusman?
Here.
Mr. Conrad?
Here.
Mr. Kovac?
Here.
Mr. Bell?
Here.
Quorum.
Thank you, everyone. We will start off with special meeting item one, unfinished business, letter A, the approval of funding of 5.8% employee pension contribution offset case judgment. Presentation by Larry Langer of Cavanaugh McDonald. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Larry Langer from Cavanaugh McDonald is noted there, and Sean's on the line. I just want to make sure that he's at the ready to read things on the letter as they come up. So you'll recall last full board meeting, we were here talking about funding of what I refer to as the lawsuit, the 5.8% pension contribution judgment, I think is Mr. Bell said. And when we have a letter dated May 20th that we discussed at the May 26th board meeting that talked about taking the unfunded liabilities generated by that lawsuit and how, you know, one way to amortize or pay off those liabilities. During the course of the board meeting, there was some discussion and it was noted that, you know, there's a little bit of gray area in terms of how you might characterize the judgment or the lawsuit liabilities. You know, if you thought of it as a plan provision, you might amortize over one period of years. If you thought it was like a gain loss, just normal course of business, you'd amortize over a different set of years. In the June 3rd letter that you all have in your pockets and its packets, and it's probably up on the screen, we updated it to amortize all the unfunded liability over the gain loss period of 10 years. That's in play for the upcoming valuation. And so you have the contribution amounts using that policy in the June 3rd letter for fire. It's like 2.3 million in the first year. For police, a little over $1 million. And then the payment of the unfunded extra accrued liability amounts, which are almost virtually the same, will continue for 10 years. It'll take 10 years to pay them off. And that's opposed to the May 20th letter, where we pay off the retro payments all in one year. And so you have a payment, instead of roughly 3 point some odd million, you have a payment of almost 12 million in the first year. And then it drops off to about $2 million a year thereafter. So we would like a decision so we can wrap up the presentation that we're delivering at the end of this month, I think June 25th or 6th, so that we can tie things down and wrap up the presentation and the and the reports. So, you know, the two choices, they're both reasonable choices, the May 20 letter or the June 3rd letter. That's it for my prepared comments. I certainly have a lot of unprepared comments, and am happy to entertain any questions.
I got a quick question at the beginning. Jerry, Larry, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Tom.
you mentioned that one plan provision and two, the way we're viewing this is either a gain loss under the normal course of business. Which one of those is A or B for your proposal? Because you've got, last time you presented us with 9 million this year and then the rest over the next 10, and now you've updated with all of it over 10 equal increments. So which goes, yep. What goes with one and what goes with two?
So the May 20 letter, the first one, is treating it more like a plan provision.
Okay. And then
the one early June 3rd is more of a gain loss.
Okay.
And you know, that May 20, I know this is getting in the weeds. I mean, portions of that, you know, the retro payments we treated as a lump sum contribution, but the remainder of it, because it was part active, part retiree, we phased that in over 10 years.
Okay. Then,
did that?
Yeah.
Just go on, Tom.
And then, I mean, just as a starting point, why are we here? I mean, you seems to me you presented the May 20th letter at our last meeting, and it had a course of action, and it had the what you then described as, you know, the actuarially sound way to do it. But now we're looking at other options. Why are we looking at other options? Is, I know Mr. Kovac asked about this issue, but we haven't. It appears that the only reason we would explore option two is to distribute the expense to the city, which I'm not sure is our role. And did we get an official request from the city, or was Mr. Kovac's comment here as, because we all wear other hats, but we're careful what we're doing when we're wearing certain hats. Is, are we considering this a request from the city to do it this way, or are you presenting it to us this way because, you being Larry, because you just thought of this second piece? Or basically I'm asking why we're here.
Yep, so there was no motion at the last board meeting, so I couldn't complete my work. Is part of it is Larry. You know, I try to listen, and I think there's, I think either of these are reasonable. You know, you heard my comments on the first one. I sort of like those retro payments. To me, absent this judgment, we probably wouldn't be doing them. But I could see you could treat this as a loss to the system as well, an actuarial loss, right? And the reason for that is we really didn't change the specific provisions, just the court told you what pay to put in for this group, what pay goes into their benefit. I think the other thing that see, so I walked my way through it afterwards when we were discussing it internally. You know, had this been included in last year's valuation, we unfortunately would have been amortizing it over 30 years, which is way out of bounds. But we talked about the fact that, yeah, funding the plan closure over 30 years is out of bounds. If it had always been in place, you know, we would have done the initial loss over, I think, 15 years back in 2018. There's a lot of different potential policies that could have been followed based upon when this was reflected. But so I'd give it a mixture of a little bit of this is Larry. I'm assuming you're saying that in glowing terms, Tom. And a little bit of this is, there was no motion.
Okay.
To wrap it up.
Yeah, because that's what I've not decided either way on things, so that's why I'm hoping to get very informed out of this meeting is, but it leaves me wondering when you say plan provision for option one, how is it not a plan provision? It was a change in benefits that was bargained by one of the plan sponsors and effective pay period 1/2016. The only reason it was delayed and the dollars accumulated to this $9 million point is because it was chose to challenge that in court, and ultimately the courts said what, you know, what we have in our hands now is that it should have been paid back to them, and now that money has come due in a lump rather than how it should have been paid and was originally paid out. I was here in 2017 when the vote was put, when it was put to us to claw back that money, and with the, at the time I voiced my opinion of the legal opinion from the city attorney, which was terrible and bared out to be terrible, to do this. So here we are now with this lump sum that's come due because this money has accumulated while it was treading water. And we're supposed to, we're being asked to look at option two as this is just some natural gain loss in the normal course of business, as you put it. Aren't gain losses in the normal course of business usually like experience differs somewhat from our expected, you know, like something goes outside of trend for retirements or things, or investments don't come back as strong as we had anticipated, so then you have to amortize a new unfunded liability. Lawsuits and bargained plan provisions don't really fall in that category, do they?
You're not, and so generally you're right. For the, but when you talk about bargaining, typically the one that falls into gain loss is pay, you know, pay schedules. You know, those things tend to, you know, any pay increases that occurred, whether they're a result of bargaining or not, those things tend to be gains and losses. You know, we don't, and I might be mishearing the question, Tom, but.
Yeah, hey, Larry. Yep. If I could add something real quick, Tom, to your original question, I think my take would be, you know, why we're here is because, you know, Larry and I, we serve the board and we serve you guys. And during the meeting last time, it seemed like there was some real interest in going down this route. And so we prepared the analysis, you know, and we discussed it internally. And like we said in our letter, you know, we believe that either could be a reasonable approach. You know, as you mentioned, typically actual experience falls under gains and losses due to actual experience deviating from what's expected in the actual assumptions. But on the flip side of that, you know, plan provision changes are typically things that are passed in law. They're not, you know, the court system reinterpreting or refining the interpretation of what was previously understood about the plan provision changes. And so that's why this doesn't really fit neatly into either category. And part of the reason why we believe that either one of these is a reasonable approach is because one thing is the magnitude relative to the size of the fund itself is relatively small impact. And another thing is, you know, the incremental negative cash flows resulting from a 10-year amortization policy doesn't produce a lot of, it's not, it doesn't generate a lot of negative risk for the system's funding status. And so those are just some of the comments that I had to hopefully provide some clarity and support for Larry.
Oh, good. Yeah, that helps. And then my last question is just, does, if we go the item two out, all of it over the 10-year period, does this qualify under, maybe Patrick has to comment because you may not know, but does this qualify for funding through the sales tax, or does this, because I know there's two portions that you're doing now, Larry, where you have the 2022 normal cost, and then you have the unfunded liability. What category does this money fall under, this new money?
I'm gonna talk first, and thank you, Larry, that was wonderful. I'll talk first, and then I'm sure Patrick will mop up after me, but you know, the impact, whatever we do in terms of the sales tax increment, you know, whatever change that we have here, I think flows almost completely to the sales tax. I say almost, that normal cost piece may not, but the vast majority of it does flow through to the sales tax, to the extent there's sales tax available to pay it. But, you know, we increase the contribution, and that increases the total amount payable for sales tax. And you've noted, like, the fixed amount that the city and the other employers are on the hook for is that 2022 normal cost. That doesn't change.
Okay, that, yeah, good. Yeah, that's I really want to ask that because there was a time that wasn't too long ago that city council said publicly that they didn't have the money and they weren't going to pay a pension fund. Some alders were exploring that idea, so I'm not comfortable with that under, if that money falls in that category, but if it, like you just said, it falls under the sales tax, which seems to be a pretty solid earmarked stream, then I'm less scared of item two. But again, you answered my question, so I'm sorry, I'll share the floor with anyone else now that wants to chime in.
Thank you, Tom. Any other comments or questions from board members?
Mr. Chair, I have two questions.
Rudy, go ahead. Please, go ahead.
First question's a little off the mark, but I'm just curious. If you take the 10-year option, you're really basically extending a loan to the city at 6.8%. But isn't the city's borrowing rate less than 6.8%, or is it precluded from borrowing for this type of expense? Because it seems to me if they could borrow this at a borrowing rate of about 5% or whatever it is now and pay the whole thing, that would be cheaper for the city than this plan, unless they're precluded from it. The second comment is that if you're trying to capture sales tax money, your odds are better, I would think, of getting all the sales tax money to pay it if you use the 10-year incremental payment, because you won't have a year where your costs, for example, next year might exceed the amount of money that would be paid by the sales tax is not enough for that 1 year hit, if you see what I mean. So those are my two questions. If anybody can help me with that.
I could jump in there a little bit, Rudy. I do think you really hit the nail on the head in terms of with your second point about reducing volatility. I think in general, I mean, this board's always worked with the plan sponsor to reduce volatility, for instance, with the prior five-year smoothing format, which now because of Act 12 is no longer exists. But I think there's a clear interest in the plan sponsor having predictability for a variety of reasons. It helps the sponsor, but it's the sponsor, so it helps the fund, for year-to-year budgeting. And I think, but then on top of that now, there's this needle being threaded with Act 12, which Klusman referred to as well, right? So that there's, you know, the sales tax money has to be spent in certain ways, essentially on either police and fire increases or maintenance or on eligible pension costs. So actually, if you increase the eligible pension costs in any given year, you decrease the city's incentive or you lower the threshold of how much they have to increase police and fire in a given year. But having a one-year bump and then going down when you've got sales tax revenue that may also end up being volatile, we really don't know yet. I think there's a strong interest in having less volatility so there can be predictability and steady increases in police and fire sworn staffing as mandated by Act 12. And if you suddenly have a jump that then goes away in pension costs, it could make it harder for the city to plan to meet those requirements.
Okay, thank you. By the way, does anybody know what the city's borrowing cost is or whether they can borrow for this kind of thing?
Well, Rudy, this is Jerry. Mr. Chair, if I can answer. Typically, the city does borrow to pay its pension contribution. I'm on the debt commission. And that's an annual event. I don't happen to have the borrowing rate, but perhaps a comptroller does. The latest, we haven't been in market for a while now, for a few months. Bill, do you know what it is?
Sure, Jerry. I mean, it would be lower than 6.8%, certainly.
I have a follow-up question on that, just to help understand it, is because I think I said at the board meeting, like the last meeting, that I really didn't, I kind of liked the aspect of going the 10-year route, because then we're getting a fixed 6.8% back on it, whereas we give it to David, and then he sometimes makes more, but sometimes makes less. Do we really get that 6.8, though? Because when the city prepays, they get discounted 6.8, so are we really extending this 10 years for the base amount, or is there accumulated interest in this, Larry?
So the you're right on the prepay, like, you know, part of the stable contribution back in 2013, we had a credit with the interest rate that was going on. So if you made the contribution earlier in the year, you know, the contribution was less. This to me is a little bit of the reverse, Tom, because it's, you know, instead of paying it as a lump sum all, you know, at the beginning of 2025, where there would be no interest charges accrued other than, you know, there was interest on the, I'm a little confused. I think the fire retro payments have interest, police maybe not. I might have that reversed. Other than that quarter ordered interest, there would be no interest because if they pay it as a 1/1/2025, you know, they didn't really take a loan, as it were. I think that's the phrase that we're sort of using. But if they take that amount and they amortize over 10 years, I guess proposal two we're calling it, there would be interest charges that they would be paying. So instead of, you would think I could memorize these things, but instead of the retro payment amount of about, let's just call it $10 million, they'd be paying more than $10 million over the course of time because it includes interest charges. Yeah. Did that answer, Tom?
I can illustrate that a little bit.
Yeah.
I have seen a copy of the debt valuation that uses 10-year amortization. If the contribution for next year is paid at the beginning of the year, it's a 177.9, almost 178 million. If they wait until the end of the year to pay it, it's 190 million. Okay, so now the contributions are sizable enough so that at 6.8%, it's substantial. You know, that's $13 million.
Okay. I guess to help me conceptualize, I guess then I would ask the question, and I hope I'm not out of place saying, is that do we know the city, are we just picking one or two, whatever we, as a board, are we trying to is there an advocacy for either one or two? Because if we pick two, it's more money over a longer period of time, but is the city then going to, because this is a city, it's not all the employers, this is because of its police fire, it's all going to go to the city. Do they want us to do this, or are they going to say, well, what'd you go and do that for? We would have rather paid it off now and paid less money, because there's, you know, you could, like Larry said, we can kind of see this either way. I guess, Mr. Kovac, you could speak to that, I guess, if that's...
Yeah, well, speaking for the city's budget office, we have a strong interest in reducing this kind of volatility, because it'll really put us in a bind this time. And it might actually force, it's hard for me to predict, you know, what the mayor's going to end up proposing in September, because it's only early June. But an unexpected increase on this scale will force the mayor to have to make a series of other choices that are, I would say, are much less bad than this amortization schedule, would be what, speaking with my other hat. In terms of the, going back to the interest payment, I mean, there's a couple different issues here. One is the city's voluntary choice to prepay at a discount or to avoid a penalty, however you want to look at it. But there is a voluntary prepayment that the city's been making, continues to make, and our plan our long-term plan is to continue making that, but it is at the city's discretion whether or not to not make that prepayment in full and then lose the discount or get a penalty. Now, there's a bunch of other constraints that would prevent that from being done. That's why I say partially, because we did borrow back when the arbitrage was better, back when the rate was 8.25 and the borrowing costs were 2 or 3%, so you had a 6% spread. We did borrow, I think, $60 million on a five-year note that we renewed. Bill would remember exactly. But so a big chunk of that prepayment was done with borrowing. So that kind of borrowing that Rudy suggested, sorry, you know, Trustee Conrad suggested, does make sense. It made a lot more sense 10 years ago when the spread between our borrowing costs and the pension discount rate was huge. I mean, now the spread is still a spread, but it's not as significant. So there's a portion of that prepayment is borrowed for. Act 12 obviously has requirements on the amount of money that effectively has to be spent on a pension in any given year. But if the amount the pension actually costs spikes in a given year in a volatile way, it forces us into a series of other bad choices because we got to balance our budget every year and there's limited levers.
Okay, good. Thanks for that, because I just was a little nervous that we were giving out medicine that maybe the patient didn't want. So, okay.
Thank you, Tom and Nick and Rudy. Just to let everyone know, Molly, you're on the line now.
I am, thank you.
Welcome. So we're just in the discussion portion, Molly, and opening it up to board members and staff. Regarding any other comments or questions?
Tom, again, real fast. I don't know if I heard it, but Larry, these are both actuarially sound.
Is that a question?
Yeah, for you.
Yeah. I mean, they're both sound. They're both, you know, I'll say actuarially reasonable in the letter. You know, these are both reasonable ways about going about the funding of the plan. So, yes.
Okay.
All right, thank you, everyone. Any other comments or questions before we put forth the motion?
Yeah, this is Rudy Conrad. I just want to say that I'm prepared to support the 10-year plan for two reasons. One, I think it increases our chances of having more of this cost covered by the sales tax. And the second, they're paying us 6.8% interest, which is a sure thing, as opposed to relying on the investments returns over the next 10 years. So I don't see much risk in this and perhaps a benefit.
Thank you, Rudy. Any other comments or questions? Does anyone strongly agree for the plan one option, or want to advocate for that? Right, not hearing any, would accept a motion to, or propose a motion for the 5.8 pension offset lawsuit to be paid amortized over 10 years. As mentioned in Proposal 2 by Kavanaugh McDonald.
This is Conrad. I so move.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
Elliot will second.
Thank you, Tim. Do we have any objections regarding that motion? Not hearing any objections, that motion passes. Thank you, Larry, and all of your staff for running this numbers and getting that to us in such a timely fashion. And do I have any other questions or comments for board members or staff? Not hearing any, I will take a motion to adjourn this meeting.
Cross for a motion.
4 seconds.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Ms. Ford. Any objections? Not hearing any, the motion to adjourn passes. It's 12:03 p.m. Thank you, everybody.